Hello, this is Marty and Ariadna.
And this is our third installment of Harp Tales Stories from Behind Our Strings.
Or today we should say stories from behind our screens because we are recording over Zoom.
Throwback to Zoom University. Anyways, thank you all so much for joining us last week on our little chat about programs. And thank you everyone who participated in our polls. We absolutely love hearing y'all's thoughts and suggestions. So keep it up. Tell us things. We're like little information collectors out here.
Yeah, we
Information.
really love going through, like hearing everybody's feedback. It's been so much fun reading your DMs and reading your thoughts about what we should and shouldn't talk about. We want everything. Please send all of your thoughts your way. Even ideas for different series. Thank you to those who've sent ideas for that.
Also, if
And
you want to tell us your secrets, you should do that too, because we're
we
nosy
would
like
love it. Yes. Your harp
that.
secrets. Let us talk about them.
Tell them to us. But today we are kind of continuing on our little program trek, but we're more going to be focusing on what it takes to bring a program to life. And the focus of today's episode is going to be arranging. And we hope that this will be, for those of you who are curious about that side of things. I know that not every harpist does it, even though a lot of us do end up arranging for one re reason or another. So hopefully this will be kind of helpful because this is something that both of us have experience with and something we have a lot of thoughts on.
And for those of you who are not harpists, because we are hoping that this is a harp podcast for non-harpists, to be clear, when we say arranging, that is the process of finding a song or a piece, as we call a lot of what most people would call songs, and taking it, like if you hear a song on the radio, let's say we really like Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. It's the process of taking Teenage Dream by Katy Perry and figuring out what part should Ariadna have, what part should I have, and then putting them into two different parts and making our own beautiful Teenage Dream.
Yeah, that's true. But it's not just for Marty and Ariana. It's in general. It's like if you hear a song that isn't originally for one thing, you can rearrange it or transcribe it for another thing. So there's process to that madness, and we'll be talking about that. But before we really dig into that, let's hit our bum 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 harp happening of the week.
Yay. So, my harp happening of this week, since I am actually not around any harps, this is probably my longest hiatus away from a physical harp since I was postpartum. I took a pretty long maternity leave, I guess, but I have not had a harp here. So, it's been almost a month, which is so sad, but I'm still doing a lot of harp happenings. And I would be teaching, would probably be my favorite. I love seeing all my students, even though it's not in person. That's okay. Zoom University did give us that beautiful gift. And then the other harp happening that definitely so much fun is doing research for this podcast. I love digging around the internet. I feel like a little rabid possum just scuffling through all of the little harp articles I can find. I found some really interesting and weird stuff in this journey. I'm not going to talk about the weird stuff. I'll just talk about the interesting stuff today, but that's definitely
God
been my favorite.
forbid you tell me you found something weird and then you don't tell me about it. That's terrible. You got to stop doing this to me. Anyway, my harp happening isn't really from this week. It's actually maybe from last week, maybe even from a little bit before last week, but it's still an interesting one and kind of relevant to today's discussion. I believe it was like July 9th, Harp Hive hosted a intro to improv class that was run by Ben Creighton Griffiths. He's a jazz harpist, I guess. I'm sure some of you have seen him and his stuff floating out there in the ether, but really, really interesting fellow. And this was a really great kind of program for total beginners to improv, people who haven't are trying to get into it, have had really no idea how to start. That was a great class for that type of person. And I believe they even mentioned that they might do something again in the future. So if it comes up, definitely check it out. It will help you on your journey.
I love that community is growing. There's just these online little seminars because I went to another one of their little online classes a few weeks ago for Amy Turk, and I know they're doing more in the future. So it's really cool because it's all online and anybody can go. So now let's kind of get into our topic, arranging. We already talked about what that is for those of you who are listening that are not harpists. So we're going to talk a little bit about why we feel the need to arrange, when we started arranging, and kind of our history doing so. So, Ariadna, why don't you go first? I feel like you have the more interesting arranging life.
Life, my arranging lifestyle. So I'm going to preface this by saying that to broadly understand my very intricate and mysterious yet important background, you should know that I went through the public education system in Texas, and in Texas they care a lot about music, which is wonderful. It's a super well-funded program. I'm sure those of you who are Texans or maybe new Texans that are musicians have seen the way that music functions in the public school space. It's really incredible. But around the time that I was feeding into middle school was, I guess, around the time that Keela Walton was kind of spearheading an initiative to get harps into middle schools and high schools in, coincidentally, my school district and like other local districts, I guess. And so by the time I hit middle school, I wanted to be in the orchestra, and conveniently, I could get into the harp through the orchestra. This is important because Keela was kind of running that program. She was, I guess, the primary instructor. There were other teachers as well, but in the district that I was in, she was kind of overseeing the students there. And what she did was to kind of help, because the harp is very solitary. So usually it's like one, maybe if you're lucky, two harpists in your year at school. Unlike the violins, who have their whole violin section, and the cellos have their own cello section. I guess to kind of supplement that, she had these harp ensemble events for the students in the school systems. So we had like a full-on Round Rock ISD harp ensemble festival that would happen every spring, and it was great. So right from the get-go, I was kind of already doing harp ensemble and seeing how that worked. And in later years, I would even see Keela making arrangements for the group, and she was always actually arranging stuff for us. She was always writing harp parts for me to play in middle school, because middle school orchestra music doesn't usually consider the harp, I guess, because it's not in a lot of programs. So she would write out, a part for me for Fiddles on Fire, and I got to play like a little Gliss on my first concert, so it was cute stuff like that. So I was seeing arranging happening for the harp from the very start. So I was kind of always passively aware that it existed as a concept. In high school, our final spring concert was student arranged. So students were able to write their own orchestra pieces to be performed on this program. And once we had like a decent amount of harpists, we even got permission to have a harp ensemble perform at that final concert. And I arranged some music for that as well. And that just really stuck with me. And when I was looking at college programs, the UNT Heartbeats, that's where we started, our origin story.
Yeah.
We finally get here. But UNT is very well known for their harp ensemble. Quite, I mean, it's a real sight to behold, because it's the sheer number of harps involved is just crazy. It's awesome. Very
Sometimes,
exciting.
just to be clear, like 12 to 14,
12 to
I think it
14.
capped at like 14 or 15 when I was there. Like that
Yeah, I
was the
know it's been
most.
so long. Yeah, but there
Not to
was
interrupt you, but just the sheer number
the sheer
is
number
like
of
15.
harps. You especially because harps are so big, like you just do not expect this quantity of
Yeah. Well, and
instruments.
occasionally, I know that when like Ortiz came, they invited
All the
like,
local harpists? Oh my
yeah.
gosh, that
I
was
want to
crazy.
say at one point, weren't there about 90, or am I like making that up?
I think you're
Were there
making that
really 90?
up.
Because I think it happened twice. He came twice, one before my time, and I really want to say it was 90.
I
I
mean,
know that sounds
maybe.
crazy, but I like that in my head, like, could 90 harps fit in the performance center? I don't know, but it was a
Maybe,
lot.
maybe
It
not.
was
It
a
was a
lot.
lot. The point is, the Heartbeats had a lot of harps, and the harp ensemble was like a huge part of the program. It was essentially, I think it functioned as our chamber music credit.
Yeah, it did.
And so we were all in this ensemble. We'd rehearse every week, and we would also write arrangements for the ensemble. And it was a really great environment to do that, because you could arrange literally anything and you didn't have to worry about copyright, because in the name of education, you can do whatever you want. And so we just had a grand old time. Everyone would write a piece and we'd perform it in the spring. So that's kind of where the real serious nature of arranging for harp ensemble kind of came up for me. I'm sure it was the same as for
Yeah.
you as well.
Yeah, it was the same for me, except for I did not have. So I am from East Texas. Ariana's from Austin. I am from East Texas and I love East Texas. However, the school I was at, I went to a really small private school. I graduated in class of 15. We did, and my choir teacher was wonderful. I'm not trying to say any of my music profession, like teachers that I had were not good. She specifically was a huge influence on me and she was fantastic. However, I did not get to play like with other harpists unless I went to a summer camp. I did not ever in my normal musical life play even like harp and violin. I didn't play in a lot of different ensembles, and I did try to play in like local orchestras, and I had conductors who were super kind and very sweet and so happy to have me. However, I didn't have a teacher arranging orchestra parts for me, and I have just vivid memories of them handing me like the piano reduction and being just telling me, here, make this work. And then, you know, my 14, 15-year-old brain that never done anything, that was really overwhelming. And I was just kind of like, what do I do with this? Like, I don't know what to do with this. I was super overwhelmed, and I would try to play everything. I was supposed to make an arrangement. I did not know what I was doing. Nobody ever told me even about MuseScore, which sounds very stupid because I probably could have just found it online by myself, but I did not have. I never saw anybody making arrangements. I never saw any of that. And then when I would go to summer camps and whatnot, I would have like 4 weeks of immersion or whatever the time was, but we weren't making our own arrangements. We were playing arrangements that had already been published. So I did not realize that this was something that the average layperson harpist just did. I thought that you had to be kind of upper in the like upper echelon harpist in order to make these arrangements and kind of be on the scene until I got to UNT, and then I was told like, oh, everybody makes an arrangement. And I was thinking, okay, like I'm gonna have to go through a course and like jump through all of these hoops in order to be on this level. And that was not the case. It was kind of you get in there and you have to make an arrangement your freshman year, which is a fantastic thing to do. I think it's great that it's like that, but it was incredibly overwhelming for me because I had never been around a lot of harpists. I had never done any kind of notation software. I had never taken a music theory course when I was there. It was like drinking from a fire hydrant at the time, just like, ah. I thought it's just my history with harp arranging, and it is less intimidating to me now, of course. However, I still do have a long way to go. I would like to remind Ariadna of this time of reverie.
Please. Ugh.
Reverie, I thought was pretty good.
Oh.
And I made this really quick arrangement for us while I was expecting at the time. And what I will say, like half of my brain is just gone when I was expecting. It was like reverting to being a child. It was like I was not blessed with an easy pregnancy. I'll say that. And so I made this arrangement for us because we had this gig, and I was like, this is gonna be great background music. And Ariadna was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. I think that a child could have made this.
I did not say that. I was just, you gave me something. You were like, it's done. And I was like, oh, so this is your draft? And you were like, no, it's done. And I was like, all right.
It was fine. It was for background music. It wasn't for like performance. I wasn't about to go sell it in the street. Like, everybody buy my copy. It was just for background music. And I thought that it served the purpose it needed to serve. And Ariadna was just saying, I don't know, she was just like,
I was
this.
unimpressed, I'll say that.
It wasn't supposed to be impressive. It was supposed to be pleasant background music for a gig that we had. We had several gigs that
Right.
it was
We
just
it
supposed
was
to
for
be like
something. It was supposed to be for like
fodder for
music.
our
Yeah.
folder, like
It's
just.
true, but I don't want to dissect Reverie again, but my biggest
I will
issue with
never
it
forget.
was how this is something that's actually kind of important. Your arrangement needs to be legible, especially if it's going to be kind of sight read.
No, it was legible as in because I did put it in notation software,
Yeah,
so she's reading.
I don't mean in that like Marty hand wrote
Yeah.
it with her left hand or something like that. I mean it, there's like a way to arrange the notes on the page and organize information in a way that's easy to read. Like there are certain ways to beam things. Like it, there was just There was, we're not doing this again, okay? And also, you're not playing it at my funeral. If somehow Marty outlives me, nobody let her play this at my funeral.
I have threatened that if Ariadna were to die an untimely death with I do not want to speak into the ether because that would be the worst thing in the world, that I would be so upset that in my revenge, I would say that this was the best piece she ever arranged, and I'd find another harpist and we'd play Reverie and be like, this was Ariadna's, because I'd be so upset. But that's not going to happen.
That's not gonna happen.
But I stand by that. If you do something stupid and you are taken from this earth too soon, I must enact my revenge, and I will do so. But now everyone will know that it
But
was
now,
not
everyone, it's
hired.
not me. It's
Okay.
not me. This is someone else. Anyway, that's besides the point. But yeah, UNT's arrangement kind of was very, very trial by fire. You just kind of get thrown in there. And I want to say, like, maybe we had like one talk or so kind of about it, but I don't think that we ever sat down and had a full-on crash course on what it means to, divvy up the burden,
Yeah, I
how to like
remember.
do part assignments, or rather how to
Yeah.
allocate, parts of the song to different people and that sort of thing. Yeah, I will say we did, because the concerts for the student arrangements were always in the spring, and I think starting towards the end of fall, early spring semester, we would go through people's arrangements. Like, you kind of go into the year knowing you have to make an arrangement, and then sometime, I don't remember the exact timeline, but obviously before the concert, we would sit down and read the arrangement, and Dr. Hafner would kind of be like, okay, this isn't working. This is
Yeah.
this has potential. This is great. Maybe just, fix a couple of things. Just depending on how much people worked on stuff. But like, we would have a day where we'd try to read through, maybe it was like 2 days, because there was a lot of students, where we'd read through the arrangements, and that would be a chance for the arranger to see how their piece sounds live, because that's always different from
Yeah.
any sort of MIDI playback. And just to see the how the parts are being executed, what's confusing, what doesn't sound good, what's weird, and then sometimes you would get suggestions like, oh, maybe put in, a special effect here, or cut this, or but it wasn't like heavy duty editing. And the reason I say that is because in my very strange master's journey, I started at University of Arizona, was part of Heart Fusion, and we were fortunate at Heart Fusion for that year in that it was a very small ensemble, which gave room to like really focus in on people's arrangements. We would have rehearsal twice a week. I swear it was like 4 hours of harp ensemble. I think it was technically two separate classes, but they were like back to back. But we would sit there and we would just woodshed, and we would bring in not fully completed rough drafts, but even just partial drafts of, music that wasn't quite done yet. And we would play through it, and we would on the spot try out different stuff to see how we could improve the pieces. And that was really great and valuable, but that kind of model really only worked because it was a small ensemble. But that was super cool and helpful to just have that experience of, writing and editing together.
Yeah, so I agree that that is super important. However, I think that there is kind of a adjustment period from when we were leaving school because we were together constantly in school to kind of when we are now a professional ensemble living our busy adult lives, and just kind of figuring out the balance. I think that has been a really interesting adjustment because yes, obviously we should have days where we have draft days where we're working on stuff, but especially at the time when we were having to commute at least an hour to be together, there's balance. I think it's an important thing to talk about because so many people get out of school and then they say they're going to do all these professional ensembles and all this stuff and they never do. And I think part of it is because it's hard to find the balance there. You know what I'm saying?
A little bit, but I was actually thinking about that because we have talked about this a lot. We're like, oh, some professional ensembles, they don't like rehearse as often together as they would have, back in their school years. And I agree with that. I think that's very true. But I was thinking about it, and like, think about your garage band, your local cover band who does a lot of Mr. Brightside on Saturday nights, like those people, I feel like they meet up and they work together on their music way more often than like we as classical musicians do.
Now, do you have a local garage band that you're basing this off of, or is this hypothetical? Like our dream, like are you kind of, what is the word I'm looking for?
I'm just thinking more about, let's say, not non-classical artists. I feel like jazz people probably come and have jam sessions together a lot,
You know who for sure does this, and it's not a hypothetical, and that would be like a church band. They
Exactly.
rehearse at least once a week.
At least once a week. Yeah. So I
But they
think I.
also have a venue and they have their, yeah,
It's
for sure.
true. So I was thinking about that, and yes, we do have busy professional lives, but somehow these like non-classical people are out here. They're just doing it really
Yeah.
quite frequently.
Well,
And
and now we are rehearsing more. I live
You
closer
live closer.
and
You have a harp studio. We have a desert. We have our garage. God damn it!
yes, that's true. We
It's
do.
true. So I think that'll
Yeah.
be easier. And also, yeah, like logistically speaking, you are closer. It's like only 20 minutes away instead of an hour, which is
Yeah.
fantastic. I don't know. I like the idea of being an ensemble that kind of just lives and what is it?
Eat,
Breathes
sleeps,
to
and
easy,
breathes.
yeah,
Yeah.
together.
I also like that. Obviously, we like that idea because we do everything together.
But I feel like it'd be nice to talk about now that we've kind of established our groundwork. It'd be nice to kind of migrate towards, let's talk about some stuff we like in different arrangements and stuff that we don't like. Because we've seen so many. We've seen, like, published
Yes.
professional arrangements. We've done, like, student arrangements that are a little questionable.
Yeah.
Let's kind of talk about that for a little bit.
Okay, I would love to talk about that. And I think to be clear, in this moment, we are speaking of arrangements that are arranged for harpists of the same level. We're not talking about arrangements where it's for maybe people who are beginners and people who are advanced. Specifically, at this time, we are discussing arrangements for people who are at the same, like they're the same difficulty,
Yes.
correct? Yes.
Correct. Yeah, we're talking about more, less like intermediate rep and more kind of
Like
past that
advanced.
point. Yeah.
Okay, something that I personally like is when the melody is shared. So like it's not like one part gets the whole bass and one part gets the whole melody. And this I don't think most arrangers share with me because as I've been doing research for this and kind of looking over different harp duo pieces, I have found that a lot of times one harpist gets the melody and one part gets the harmony or the bass. That for me kind of irks me a little bit. And when I'm arranging, I like to kind of make it more interwoven, like this person has a phrase of the melody and then they switch and they switch, but that actually might drive some people crazy. I don't know.
I'm not a huge fan of that. I mean, okay, I'll say this. I think it depends for me on the nature of the ensemble. So in
Yeah.
when I write for like a quartet, I do like it to where it's a little bit more of an orchestral approach. I like it
Yeah.
when one harp is kind of like the violin section, one is the bass section, one is, kind
Yeah.
of like the woodwinds or whatever I have it. I like having this sort of distinction of what each person is responsible for. It's because I think that it gives the performer a chance to really get into the mindset of I am, this is my job, and this is the role I have for this specific piece. Now, in a duo setting, like for us, I actually do enjoy kind of this antiphonal play of we're switching up parts. Maybe
Yeah.
there's a little bit of call and response. And because we're not, I guess the less instruments you have for, like, I guess the less harps you have, the more jobs there are to cover. And in a sense, it makes sense to kind of trade off because, you might get just tired from doing a certain element. And it gives the chance for everyone to try doing different things. And it gives you a chance to take a break from maybe a particularly exhausting motif or whatever.
Right.
And then it's just like a nice, it's kind of like a conversation. So,
Yeah.
yes, I do like that. But I also, in a sense, for us on in like a more kind of commercial professional capacity, when we're doing more sort of background music types things, I do like to keep it straightforward, just kind of bass melody, just because I think when you're sight reading, if you've sight read a specific element once, it's easier to sight read it if it keeps reoccurring. So if
Yeah.
you're always doing the bass, you can just focus on doing the bass. You will get it right if you flubbed it once. Like you have many redemption arcs ahead, and it gives you a chance to just kind of settle into the groove, and you don't have to think about, oh, now I have to like switch into a melodic line and treat it as such.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of has its time and place,
Right.
and it depends on a lot of different things.
I agree. And for our listeners who are confused about anything she said, I just want to clarify that since we are a harp duo, not tons of repertoire exists for us. So when we do commercially geared things like weddings or we do background music, we also have to arrange all of our music for that. So
Yes.
an hour or two, and maybe that's a little bit easier, more of pop music or
Yeah.
something.
I want to
And
say
we're
it's
also,
not that there isn't repertoire, it's just that the
yeah.
things people are requesting for, the service
I
that
would
we
say, I
offer.
think it's safe to say there's not tons of
I mean,
repertoire.
it's not tons, but I feel like You know, it's not like people are being like, oh, I'd love to hear
Dyads.
Dyads by Renaud Andress on my,
Yeah.
you know, prelude for my. No, they want to hear, you know, Harry Styles or
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, and you can't just, you know, hop on
Look
Harp
up.
Column and be like, all right, give
Yeah.
me the old harp duo version of, I don't know, what's a
Stay by Justin
Stay by
Bieber. Yeah.
Justin Bieber. Yeah, that's not it. So
Yeah.
you have to just kind of DIY it.
Exactly. And then we also are arranging for more concert pieces, and so that's why some of the difference there. If you didn't catch our previous podcast, that's what we're talking about. We're arranging for both the commercial event and we're arranging for the harp duo concerts that we have coming up. So I just wanted to clarify that, but I agree with everything that you said. I think that makes sense. Something else I really love in harp duo arrangements and just harp ensemble is I love percussive stuff. I love it when people pull out the boom whackers,
The boom
and
whackers.
I do. I think it's so fun, and do all the goofy little extended techniques. I think it really pulls the
Oh,
audience in.
interesting. I will say I have extended technique trauma, actually. I feel like some as these in this day and age, people really are just kind of overusing it. I don't mean to say,
Yes.
how do I put it? I think like the stuff that Amy Turk does is like super cool.
I think an appropriate amount of
Amount of
extended
extended
techniques
techniques.
is super fun. I like it.
I feel like that's a good summation of our
Yeah,
thoughts
for
on
sure.
things we
Yeah.
like and don't like.
All right, on to the next segment. Okay. Now we're going to hail back to history and discuss different historical people we admire who also transcribed and arranged. Would you like to talk about the difference between transcribing and arranging?
Yeah, I mean, transcriptions are usually a little bit more true to form,
Yeah.
where they try to preserve as much of the original variant as much as possible. You know, we have the Bach Grandjean Etudes. I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with them, but some people call them transcriptions, some people call them arrangements because Grandjean filled them out a little too much, a little made them a little bit more harpy and less Bach-y.
Yeah.
So, you make minimal, you
Yeah.
don't like, let's say it's a pretty bare part, you
Yeah.
don't fill it out with, you know, extra notes
Notes
to
or
make it
any extra,
sniffing. You
yeah.
don't change, or let's say there's an accompaniment pattern that is more pianistic, you say no, we're going to muscle through that.
Yeah.
But you know, in an arrangement, you might rewrite some figures to make a little bit more sense for the
Yeah.
instrument, because we do, you know, it is similar to piano, but it has differences.
Or you might add way more. You might add like more glisses, or you might add some extra like
Yeah,
jazzier
usually
little,
something a
yeah.
little harpy. You would.
Or like, for example, you could do like a jazz arrangement of Billie Eilish. That would be an arrangement, but a transcription would be like you play it exactly as she did.
Exactly, or yeah, as
Yeah.
close as you can get to that.
Yeah.
And that it's kind of like an interesting point because I feel that some people have really strong feelings on transcriptions where
Yeah.
they really just want to play music that was originally written for the harp, and they don't really care to see the transcription because they're like, oh, but it's not really for the instrument, you know?
Yeah, that's a lot
And
of people who feel
some
that way.
people might think that that's silly, and I agree with that. I do think that is a little silly, but you know, you
Yeah.
can,
I understand where it's coming from
yeah,
because,
it makes sense, but at the same
yeah,
time, you're just kind of cutting off such a huge,
you
you
are.
know, repertoire of music because you just decided, oh, well, it's
Yeah.
not the most idiomatic thing in the world. And I actually kind of, I found this article in the American Harp Journal from 1976, the summer, in case you were curious about the season of its release.
Yes.
And it's by Mr. Marcel Grandjean, and
Wow, that's cool.
it's in defense of transcriptions, because this is, you know, a discourse that has plagued our community since the 70s and probably since before that. And it's a very short and sweet article, barely a page. It's a little over a page, But he kind of just goes through and talks about why he, thinks transcriptions
Really quick
are.
pause for those of you who are not harpist. Marcel Grozny is a really big deal to us harpists. He is one of our harp daddies. He
I
has
was so hoping you wouldn't say that. Oh gosh.
too late. He kind of created a big school of harp in the US and wrote some of the pillars of our
I want
repertoire.
to
So
say, wasn't he
continue.
also like the first harp professor at Juilliard? I think
Yes,
he
I
was,
believe
yeah.
so.
Yeah,
Yes. He
so
is he's a big deal
he's
to
a big
us.
deal. He's a big deal. And
Yes.
also, I correction, this article was originally from spring 1963, but it was reprinted in 76. So clearly, we have been thinking about the nature of transcriptions as a community for a while. And I thought it was just like a nice short and sweet thought on why we should allow transcriptions. But he just kind of talks about how much beautiful music which we enjoy today has been unearthed and published by tireless research and study of scholars. And this research kind of it gives us a chance to play music that hasn't been played in a long time. And the other good point that he brings up is that the harp in its developmental track, because we went from single action to double action.
Those of you who are not harpists, that means that we could only do like a very limited amount of music, and now we can play almost everything that like a piano could play.
Yeah. So the nature of like the action and the way pedal harps work is super interesting. We could honestly have an
A
entire
whole nother,
conversation about
yeah.
this. So we'll leave it. This will be a little bit more technical for the non-harpist, I guess. But the point is, the harp was for a time, it was. When the pedal harp came about, it was a huge development, but it was still such a limited instrument that composers of the era didn't really care to use it a whole
Yeah.
lot. To put in perspective, the single action existed around the same time as Mozart, and Mozart did not like writing for the harp in the slightest because of these limitations. He only really ever wrote the Mozart and Flute and Harp Concerto, and that was because the flutist like begged him to write it for him and his daughter to play.
Yeah.
Before that kind of classical period, the harp didn't really have a lot of stuff for it, but music was still developing. A lot of wonderful pieces were being written. And after we kind of solved the issues with the single action by creating the double action pedal harp, a world opened up. And to ignore the music that kind of existed before the development of the double action is it's foolish because you are denying yourself as a musician access to history. We have so many beloved pieces for, both piano, for orchestra, for string quartet that,
Harpsichord also,
harpsichord,
yeah.
yes, that we should have a shot to play at. And it's okay that we sound different from those instruments. That's another thing that Grangini mentions. It's that it's okay that we don't sound like a piano, that we don't sound like a harpsichord. These are not faults. It's not a bad thing that the harp doesn't sound, like an organ or whatever. These aren't really limitations. It's just something that gives a harp its divine beauty. That's a quote. And they can challenge the player. So even if we can't really do the same legato effect that like a piano can, we can still have the notes kind of sing and ring out, and it'll have this smooth quality that's different from a true legato, but like it
Yeah.
still imitates it, and that's very nice. It brings, and this is kind of the last kind of closing thought from his article, and I really like it, so I'm going to read the whole thing. He says, "Let me conclude by saying that in music, and more specifically in the music of ancient times, there is a constant transcription, in the sense that the interpreter transcribes, transmits a message, brings to life the composer's thought in order that the listener may grasp this thought with his mind and thereby feel an intellectual satisfaction and at the same time an impression of beauty." So in a way, we're always transcribing. And I love that. I absolutely agree with that. I think it gives music more like nuance and meaning and interpretation. Yeah, I was thinking about this specifically, and I want to circle back to that class on improvisation that we did with Ben Creighton Griffiths. And in that class, he mentioned that like when he's doing his stuff, he doesn't want the harp to sound like the harp. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. So kind of his approach to playing in the jazz scene is he tries to make the harp sound like a piano or like a bass or something else. Like he's trying to fill the functional, like a functional role in an ensemble by imitating an instrument. And I think that's an approach. I don't know if I agree with that, because I think if you're going to be playing a harp, it should damn well sound like a harp.
I'm thinking about that. Well, I mean, I think I understand what he's saying
Yeah, like I
because you can
understand.
try to be a piano on the harp as much as you want, and it's going to still be a harp, but then you're
Right.
fulfilling a really interesting new role, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
What you're saying?
I wonder if he was meaning to say in that he's trying to, for like, it's not so much that it's more like he's trying to fulfill like a certain role or function. Maybe that's what's going on, but that's not the intent that I got. Like, he kind of was like, I want it to sound like a piano. I don't want the harp to sound like a harp. And I can respect that, I guess. I think sometimes, we have cool effects. Like, we can try to sound like guitars, we can try to sound like other things. And I think there's a time and place for it. Like, I remember my last year in school, Dr. Sherman brought in Willy Maritz. He's this German arranger composer, and he's done a lot of beautiful arrangements for a harp quartet. I even think he gave a talk at one of the summer conferences, this last one that happened in Orlando, about arranging for harp quartet. But he came in to talk to us, and I had him look at one of my arrangements. I was doing an arrangement of the Masquerade Waltz, and he kind of mentioned that, that I should really like look at the original score and think about, the sounds and the textures. Like he was like, see here, this part, it's like it's done by the oboe, so it should sound like, why do you have a harmonic here? Like, it should sound more nasally, more pungent. And I was like, okay, that's, you know what, that's fair. Like, I can understand that. But at the same time, it's like, this is a harp. I don't want people to come and listen to my harp quartet arrangement of Masquerade Waltz and be like, wow, that sounded just like the orchestra. I want it to be like, wow, I just saw four harps try and like schlog through the Masquerade Waltz. Like that,
Hopefully it wasn't schlogging, but yes.
it was a little schlogging because nobody practiced the parts, but it was fine. It's my own damn fault. I love a good chromatic run, and people don't want to practice the pedals on that.
That's really interesting. I tend to agree with you. I feel like but at the same time, you can try to sound like the oboe as much as you want on the harp,
Yeah.
and it's still going to sound like the harp.
It's still gonna sound like the harp. I don't know about this whole like, why are we trying to mimic other instruments when we are a perfectly fine and respectable instrument as it is? That's like, I guess, the thing that I don't like. It's kind of like,
Okay, thought exercise. What if, for
what if?
example, an oboe quintet wanted to do an arrangement by something of Grozny? I can't think this would be very difficult because we have, I don't know, just bear
That
with me.
okay, all right.
Okay. And so then they were saying, like, let's say there was a glissando part and they wanted to do it. They were like, oh, we're going to do this oboe effect here instead of trying to make it sound like harp gliss. How would you feel about that?
Okay, here's my other thought. This is a thought that might be a little conservative, but and I think a lot of, harpists have this thought, and I agree with it. I think if it's not going to sound good on the harp or any other instrument, you shouldn't bother transcribing it. I
Okay,
think if
but
it's going to sound, my
you're
thing
jumping away from
is
my thought
no, my thought
exercise.
is if a five oboes want to play Grozny, I'd be like, don't. It's not going to
Okay,
sound
fine.
good.
What if somebody wanted to orchestrate a Grozny? So whole orchestra, but there were no harps and anything that was like specifically harpy, like a gliss, they decided to give, let's say, to the oboes. And they were like,
That
just
would be a bad choice. There's literally
You're not,
something.
but my point is not, it's, yes, obviously it's a bad choice, but do you think it should be a, do you think, would you be like, you need to try to sound like the harp here, or would you be like, do this in an oboe way?
If I was transcribing for orchestra a Grozny piece, I simply would not give a gliss to an oboe. I'd give it to a much more pleasant sounding instrument, like let's say maybe a flute, or
Okay,
even
fine. Do you
like
think the flute
a mar
player,
like a
would you be
marimba or
like,
something.
try to embody the aura of a harp for this gliss, or would you be like, do this like a flute?
I would ask them to do the flute effect that makes it sound the most like effortless and sparkly. whether that's whatever that may be. I wouldn't necessarily want them to embody the sound of a harp, but I would want them to capture the nature of the effect, is what I would say.
Okay.
That's my feeling on that.
I think that's valid. Okay, fair.
You know what I
So
mean? So
you
it's kind
think,
of, so I think, like, instead of being like, I should sound like the piano, I think you should embody the characteristic that a piano gives to, let's say, an
Okay,
ensemble.
so to be clear, you as an arranger and as a performer and as a human, when you approach a composition, you are removing the instrument from the composition. You are rem and you are looking only at the notes, and you're trying to figure out the intention of the notes without whatever instrument it was originally intended for.
No, not necessarily. I
It
consider
kind of sounds like that.
I consider qualities of the instrument, like its timbre, the texture that it brings, and specifically what that instrument is there to do. For example, like to talk about that part in the Masquerade Waltz, it was specifically about this kind of like, it was like this grace note octave leap that was a little, it was pungent, it was punchy, and the function of that oboe in the orchestration was to cut through the orchestra and hit that ba-dum kind of sound to make it kind of, it was supposed to like peak, it was the highest frequency at the moment. And when I arranged that, the way I wanted to handle that kind of like cut and punch was I felt that it would sound good to have like do the grace note and then add a harmonic that doubles that higher pitch just to make sure it really we hit that note, like it pops out. Willie's solution was, oh, make it more PDLT, just drop the harmonic, just do the grace note PDLT so that it's punchy and pungent and mimics the sound of the oboe and it still cuts. I think both solutions are valid. I just think one is a little harpier than the other. And personally, I don't dislike PDLT. I think it has a time and place, but I think it came down to preference in that moment. I don't think there was like a right or wrong answer there. I think both are valid solutions. Honestly, I could, because that motive comes across multiple times, I could probably alternate it. But the goal is to have that motive come out. And I don't discount that the reason why it was originally given to the oboe was to make sure it cuts through everything.
Okay, I think that that's fair.
Yeah, so it's not that I don't, like,
And
it's not like I,
also,
you know,
I'm not,
take everything out, you know, like I do think about the original instruments that it was for, and I think about why it was given to those instruments more than anything. Like, I think about, okay, so you would give this chord to the French horn because, or to the four horns or whatever, so that it really carries and sits and sustained, right? That's why it was given to them and not like, you
The
know,
harp.
the harp.
So, and the other th difference that I'm not super familiar with this arranger. So, is he a harpist? He's not,
No,
right?
he's not. He's just like really passionate about harpsichords. And honestly, he
I
has
love
really
that.
awesome arrangements. Like he has so super like cool arrangements of, I guess, I don't know if this is like the big band era of American music, but he has I just these really fun kind of jazzy, swingy arrangements. They're super great. They're amazing for harp quartet. And he has, you know, he has really great stuff. I feel like, I don't know if you've ever looked into his work, but
I did a little bit for this podcast episode. I was looking into different harp arrangers, and I did come across him. He's done a lot for harp duo as well. A decent amount, not as much. He's mostly harp quartet, but he has definitely done some for harp duo. The reason I asked though, if is he a harpist, because I feel like since we are harpists, we have an arsenal of things that we kind of return to, and harmonics are one of those things. And so we're always like, oh, I'll just do a harmonic here. And then if you are not a harpist, that's probably not your first thought.
I think,
Whereas,
I don't know if he's like one of those harpists that kind of, or he's, sorry, my bad. He's one
not a
of those,
harpist.
not a harpist, not, he's one of those, the impression I get is he's like one of those real like harp enthusiasts, like the type of
I
person
love
who,
those people. I love a good harp enthusiast.
enthusiast, like he really, and he's done this for so long that I think he kind of thinks like a harpist because so much of his stuff fits so well into the hands that it just, he shows that he knows what's up and he works really closely with, you know, groups and whatnot. I
Well,
think
I'm not
so.
saying that in a bad way. I think it's
Yeah,
great. But I'm saying that like a lot of times when I'm arranging, like the first thing, like harmonics are one of the like first things I'll throw in to
Right. No,
something.
yeah, that's fair. I can see. I think there are certain things that harpists will kind of lean towards. I will say, like, especially in like the student arrangements at UNT, there is definitely like a list of the stuff that people will hit because they go, "Oh, I know what that is."
Yeah, it's like
It's
accessible,
comfortable. It's
easy,
like,
it's comfortable. Yeah. Well, very cool. Okay. My article that I decided to kind of dig from, I have just become a little bit obsessed with the New York Harp Ensemble to the point where I think about it a weird amount. I am a little bit obsessed. I have been digging around the internet for as much information on this group as I can. I find them absolutely fascinating. And for a lot of reasons, which we could probably do an entire series just on the New York Harp Ensemble is what I'm learning. But I found this article titled The New York Harp Ensemble Collection at the International Harp Archives by Elaine Pack-Lister. And this is from the 2007 Summer New American Harp Journal edition. So it is about the New York Harp Ensemble's music, how they arranged, and where the collection is now. So it was their entire collection, including promotional materials, any flyers that they had. It's all at the BYU archives, and it is 700 pounds of materials. That's insane. 700 pounds of materials, like sheet music. So I think it's 53 boxes in total. And so this article kind of outlines a lot about how they would arrange. So this is a quote. The ensemble generally played from Aristide's original harp transcription. Sometimes the music was photocopied as a backup, but generally the harpist played from the original manuscripts. End quote. So that's fascinating to me because it was all handwritten by mostly Aristide's wife, and they would play from these handwritten copies. And so they did feature music from 176 different composers in this collection. And this is another quote. Aristide strived to make each part interesting, distinctive, and an integral part of the work. He would share melodies between the parts, but generally kept thematic elements with a particular player. So this is, I'm skipping a little bit, but still quoting. As one might find in an orchestra string section, generally the first harp plays the highest notes, with the fourth harp playing the bass.
That's what I do.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. And then he would also arrange harp concertos so that they would have like a soloist and then have the different harps playing the orchestral parts. So maybe they would do, I don't know if they for sure did that, but they did this with Concertstück. So like they had someone playing the harp part of Concertstück, and then he would arrange the orchestral part between the other three
Oh,
harpists.
okay,
That was
interesting.
super interesting. And then this was really exciting for me because apparently Aristide would arrange for two harps as well, and then have he has quite a few harp duo arrangements, but then just double the parts for the quartet. So if you want to access this, which I do, you can email the archives. In this article, they say to email David Day, who, according to my research, is still there. Hopefully he is, and you can purchase scans of this without going to the archive. Other things that aren't particularly on topic, but I found very exciting and fascinating, which is the amount of composers that we all know and love that composed for this ensemble. Like Alvin Hovhaness, he composed and dedicated a piece to them. Leonard Bernstein, like
Oh,
there's so
what?
many, yeah,
They
like
got
so
okay.
many. They have such a crazy list of composers who composed for this ensemble. And the thing that I found that I was really excited about that I alluded to earlier, that I don't know why I was so excited about it, but I found this article by a journalist talking about harp quartet, and he just seemed very unimpressed with the idea. He was like, this is too many harps, and it's not like there's definitely a limit. And I can link that article in our Instagram story so other people can read it. Not that I want to spread that, but I just find it so interesting because they just seemed so popular, but they still got like these critiques. I don't know.
I mean, you
I'm
gotta make a
very into
living
this.
somehow, right?
I really want to go to Utah and dig through these boxes. This is so exciting to me. And if anybody knows anything more about the New York Harp Ensemble, something that I'm missing, if you have any interesting tidbits of history about this that you would like to share, please, please, please send it my way because I'm obsessed. And then the other thing that I wanted to touch on for their arrangements that I loved, this is another quote. Barbara fondly remembers the audience's reception to Yankee Doodle. It was arranged and played in various forms, first how a drunkard would play it, then how sophisticated ladies would play it, and then how tired musicians would play it, etc. At the very end, Sylvia Kowalczyk would stand and play the last movement, the piccolo part at the highest register. Aristide also composed a European version. They would play Yankee Doodle in the style of various composers such as Bach, Chopin, Debussy, and others, trying to choose a composer from the country where they were playing. That's the end of the quote. I love that they're doing this. It's just the marketing with the arranging. They are one.
Yes.
It's all part of the programming and the arranging and the marketing. They tailored there, and there's more about that. They would wear clothes tailored to the specific audience that they were playing for. They would change at intermission. It was just all like there's no separation between the programming and the arranging and the marketing,
Yeah.
and I find that very interesting.
Very cool.
And I love the Yankee Doodle, how they would look. That's just so fun. So we need to go to BYU and dig through these boxes, and I would definitely be reaching out to the archive to see if we could.
Could do that.
Yeah, for sure. Now we're going to talk about how to divvy up our arranging because we are not doing what the New York Harp Ensemble did. One of us is not doing all the arranging. We are both contributing to the arranging process. So, Ariadna, which pieces for our classical program are you arranging?
I mean, I will say how we're divvying it up, it's like you do whatever you want to do, and we just try to slap it into the program is kind of like our solution here. You had pieces you really wanted to arrange. I had pieces that I had kind of in the works. And then for our classical program, we actually have some pre-existing arrangements already on it. So we wanted to pick stuff kind of the round out. So I think we should start by saying, like, on our classical program, if you have seen our post on it, we're gonna do the Peacock Gardens by Bernard Andress. We felt it was very Miami. We're gonna do the Mother Goose Suite, just because we really love that piece, and there happens to already be an arrangement for harp duo for it.
For anyone who just has never been to Miami, Peacock Gardens is appropriate because there is a very, very large community of wild peacocks.
That makes it sound like a formal organization, but they're
Well,
legit.
I didn't know that until I moved to Miami, and I thought it was crazy. I thought it was insane.
They're everywhere. They're all over there, and it's not just peacocks. There are also chickens that cross the road. If you've ever
They just
wondered,
live there. Like they belong to themselves, to be clear. Like
nobody owns these creatures. They are just out and about.
they are like
Like
their own.
for a large metropolitan area, there's like a strange amount of wildlife that just kind of like exists in the city.
Well, the peacocks are invasive, so that's
They're a
interesting.
problem.
But there, I don't think you can do anything about the problem. They're protected. Like people love the peacocks. Well, it's highly contested. Some people hate them because then you have these very high-end neighborhoods that just have way more peacocks for whatever reason. And they breed every year, and each peacock has like seven babies, you know? And so maybe more. And they are in everybody's yard, so they'll eat stuff in your like seeds or whatever peacocks eat, and then they will defecate. There's a lot of peacock defecation,
Defecation.
yes, all over your very fancy home and the yard. But they're beautiful
Well,
birds.
they
But one
also, and
time,
they scream. They scream like
yes,
they're
they
getting like,
scream.
you're like, did someone just get stabbed or was it a peacock?
It's usually a peacock.
Usually a
Well,
peacock. Well, in this city,
depends.
you never
Yeah, you never
know.
know. But I used to walk people's dogs, and in one woman's yard, she would have literally 70 peacocks in her yard. And they are so used to people, they will just sit there. They will not. But anyway, that is why we're doing Peacock Gardens. I just wanted to let anyone who's never been to Miami and might be like, what do you mean, peacocks in Miami? That's why we
They're
will have
everywhere.
peacocks.
They're everywhere. Anyway, we just thought it was
Yes.
thematically appropriate to our locale.
Yes,
So,
exactly.
That's on there. We have the John Thomas themes from Lucia. We mentioned that in our last program. We will be busting that one out.
Super excited about that
Super
one.
excited about that. And then just because when I feel like when you're programming classical music, it is nice to kind of go through different pe time periods. I think we kind of tried to pick the other pieces, not just like stuff we wanted to arrange, but also kind of stuff that filled out some of the time periods that were missing in the program.
Yeah, I just did stuff I wanted to arrange, but
Oh.
Ariadne really put more thought into hers. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you for acknowledging my thought. This is actually like the pieces I wanted to put on this program. I've wanted to do this set for a while, so I love a good Sicilian. It's like a nice 6/8 dance for those of you who are like, what's that? Well, it's a specific style of piece, and there's a couple of really famous ones out there. The most notable one is the Fauré Sicilian. Gabriel Fauré wrote one. Very beautiful. I think originally it was like piano and cello or something like that, and then he orchestrated it for orchestra. And I decided to rearrange that for two harps. And in that set, I'm doing two more Sicilians. I'm doing one from Bach and then one from Paradisi.
And at the end of the set, Ariadne will dance a Sicilian for us.
I thought we were going to do it together. It's a partner dance.
I think you should do it with a peacock. Just
There will
All
be no
right.
dancing on this
There'll
program.
be no dancing. Okay. That would be really cool though, because I don't know what a Sicilian actually looks like. I just know what it sounds like. And then I will be arranging Anitra's Dance, and I will be arranging by Edvard Grieg, and then I will also be arranging The Sunken Cathedral by Claude Debussy. Super exciting. And that is the arranging for that program. However, we have another super exciting series coming up for everyone who's online who can't make it to one of our in-person concerts, or you just like to hear background music of harp online. And
Or
that is
you
our
just,
potluck programming concert. I'm so
yeah,
excited.
it's gonna be a lot of fun. I feel like
Yes.
this is a chance to see what songs would sound great on the instrument, which songs would sound bad on the instrument.
Yeah.
It's just this, it would be we're hoping that this will be like a super chill kind of experience for people to have like a harp DJ moment where people can
Yes.
bring in their requests and we'll do our best to like test them out. We're hoping to kind of like over the next month to kind of curate a list
Yeah.
of songs people would like to hear,
It can
depending
be
on, it could
anything.
be
I want to
anything.
clarify, whatever
Yes.
you have a
Yes.
hankering to hear,
To
please
hear
send
it.
it our way.
And what we'll probably do is we'll assemble like source material and then we'll kind of workshop it a little bit live. I think it would be cool to kind of look at stuff to make sure it works.
Send in your request,
Send
people.
them.
Send them in. Send them
Ask
in.
us to do things.
And then we'll probably split them up and then come up with very, nice arrangements that are more appropriate for this kind of event. And let us know. We'll let you know how we did it if you want, or we'll just play them depending on what the people desire.
What the people
And
desire. If people can ask questions,
yes, please ask
they can say,
questions.
wow, I really wish that had more
Yeah.
glissandos, and then we can try to do it with more glissandos.
Yeah,
Keep
we'll do
it,
our best.
we'll do our best. So
Yes.
this is casual, this is cool, this is about the process, not the product necessarily.
And it's about just exploring what sounds nice on Harp Duo. And it
Yeah.
can be anything. Please send in the desires of your heart for Harp
Yeah.
Duo. What would you like to
The
hear?
desires of your harp.
Yeah. Beautiful. Let us know in any comment, in any form, how what you want to hear. And we're so excited to interact with you all. So be on the lookout for more information about that. And then I think this really sums up our arranging segment.
Thank you for joining us on this journey, and hopefully this is, interesting and
Interesting.
informative.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.